the future of housing in Maine. Portland has received a lot of attention for skyrocketing housing costs, but the lack of affordable workforce housing is an issue all over the state, from urban areas to its rural counties. And Maine isn't alone. Nationally, according to an analysis done by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, there is a demand for 10 times the number of homes actually being built in the country. It's a complex issue that is not simple to solve, but there are many organizations and agencies working on it. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Planners and developers are not just looking at what people need today for housing, but what they will need tomorrow. What do you see as Maine's greatest need, and how to create housing for our future workforce? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It can be challenging in Maine to find a place to buy or rent, at least one you can afford. Today, we will learn about the outlook for Maine's housing market and talk about the latest real estate trends. Joining me in the studio, Hannah Pingree. She is director of the Governor's Office of Policy and Management. Dan Brennan is the director of Maine Housing. And Gary Vogel is president of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association, also known as MERIDA. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you looking to rent or buy a home but having a hard time? Do you know any innovative solutions happening in Maine? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or as always, post on the Maine Calling Facebook page. I know this is an issue that's so important to so many people. I'm already receiving emails and calls on the topic. Dan, I'm going to start with you. We know that affordable housing is in short supply in Maine. Give us a sense of the scale. What are you seeing in terms of waiting lists, for example?
Well, there are unfortunately are thousands of people on the waiting list for affordable housing throughout the entire state. Multiple years of people waiting to get rental assistance or to get affordable apartments that are being created. But we have a great network of housing providers throughout the entire state, and we work with them closely, and we're working away at providing the resources and the help that people need. So we just keep working at it.
And when we talk about, we use this word affordable housing all the time. When we talk about that, what we mean is something in which someone's going to spend roughly less than a third of their income on housing and utilities and things like that.
Exactly. If you're spending more than 30% of your income on your housing, then that's not okay. That's not where we need to be. For people that are at the higher end of the income scale, then that's more manageable. But for many, many people in Maine, it is they have to make decisions that nobody wants to have to make.
Hannah, who needs housing? What are the demographics? Is the biggest group senior citizens, or is it young people with their first or second job?
I think the answer is to that question is both. I mean, we clearly see young people on the coast, especially, who are unable to access affordable rental properties. We have workers who want to work in a specific industry but can't work in that industry because of a lack of housing. We see that in Rockland. We see that in Portland. But we obviously have a huge growing senior population in Maine who are also struggling with the same housing issues. I mean, Dan really did a good job of outlining that. But with a significant population turning 65 every year in Maine, senior housing is going to be a growing issue, and it's a significant issue today.
Yeah, so many people say they want to downsize, but there's sometimes not a lot of options when you want to downsize.
There aren't a lot of options when you want to downsize. And one of the issues that I'm working on for the governor is our climate effort. And so part of that is weatherizing people's homes, helping people stay in their homes as they age. And a lot of that comes down to weatherizations, changing in heating systems, making houses more affordable for people to live in. So it's both an affordable housing issue, but how do we create sustainable homes for people in Maine, which has a variety of issues related to it.
Right. And I'm listening here, and I've already laid out that this is a complex issue. But, you know, it's a laudable effort to have people stay in their homes as they age. But then that's a house that's not sort of being freed up for maybe a young first time home buyer. So every sort of solution seems to have another problem. Gary, I want to ask you about some of the challenges in developing more housing. Why is supply not keeping up with demand? Why do basic economics rules not apply here?
Well, for a lot of reasons. I mean, number one of the things that's happened is the cost of construction is really increased substantially. I mean, we have materials such as steel and other metals that have been affected by tariffs. But principally, it's on the labor side where, you know, the situation was that at the start of the Great Recession, there was a huge amount of people who lost their jobs in the construction industry. Many of them have left the field or left the state. And unfortunately, young people aren't taking up that those trades. And so I know that sort of beyond the scope of this discussion today, the whole sort of workforce issue, but it is a issue that is really affecting the housing market and with construction costs really becoming expensive.
So kind of a double whammy. The materials themselves are more and more expensive. And then even if you have the materials, you can't find people to build those homes.
Well, you can find them, but you can't find them at a price that's affordable. So many, even whether it's an individual home, I think people are getting real sticker shock when they see what the cost is for new construction or renovation, and certainly for developments, kind of the multifamily housing developments that Maine Housing is involved in. Most of those projects are coming in after they're being bidded at numbers, you know, really in excess of what the budget can provide for.
And the other point to that is the amount of time that it takes a general contractor to line up all the subs and get them to complete a project. So what used to take maybe 8 or 10 months has now taken 10 or 12 months. And so it just exacerbates the situation even more.
Mm. I've heard the expression that all real estate is local. What are some of the different challenges for different parts of the state? This studio is located in Portland, and we know that it's just super high housing costs. That's not necessarily the case in rural counties, but housing is still unaffordable, right?
It is. There's a mismatch of supply and demand throughout the state. And so in areas like you mentioned with Portland, where there just simply isn't enough supply to meet the demand, that's causing prices to rise and that issue to be dealt with. But in other areas of the state, there's an excess of demand, but people don't want to be in larger farm homes that might take a lot to heat. And so understanding that there isn't one solution that will solve the affordable housing issue in Maine, and understanding that Maine is made up of 500 individual municipalities that all have their own issues, it's really important to drill down into each one of those and try and focus on what those issues are. And that's what we're looking to do, to work with community leaders in Maine.
Are there parts of Maine that where this is more of an issue than one might think?
Well, I think that in most areas of Maine that I travel into, people are aware. Now, when I traveled down here, down south in the southern part of Maine, it's all about supply and demand and what we've been talking about. Down east in Bar Harbor, finding seasonal workers to work in our tourist, in our coastal communities is a huge issue. And I know that businesses have had to cut back on the number of rooms that are available because of they can't find people that can afford to live in that town and work in that town.
Hannah, I know that we're only a few weeks into the new administration, but what are some of the solutions that the state is looking at?
Well, this is a good question for both me and for Dan, who are looking at these issues. I mean, on every single issue we face on opioids, people trying to recover from opioid abuse, they're seeking housing solutions. Families who are struggling in poverty, they are lacking affordable rental housing. On the coast, the workforce challenge, greatly exacerbated by housing. So there are a variety of solutions. We are currently debating in the state budget the amount of funding that goes into the home fund, which is an important funding mechanism. A lot of it does come down to money. Rental assistance is also a need that we've discussed for a long time and something I know the governor is interested in working on over the next couple of years. There's a bill in this session to fund an affordable housing tax credit, Representative Fecteau. It would be a $20 million over 4 years. It's something we're looking seriously at, whether the state can afford it, but clearly the need is significant.
So to provide an incentive for developers not to hand out money.
A tax credit really is a way to provide financing. It's a different mechanism than straight funding, but it's a similar mechanism.
All right. I want to ask you, Gary, what are some of the trends? What kinds of housing do people want?
Sure. Well, that's a very fluid and changing topic and dynamic. One of the things that Merita is doing is we're putting on a conference next Tuesday called The Future of Housing in Maine, Opportunities and Solutions. I'll make a little plug for it. People can attend. It's at the Holiday Inn by the Bay, and go to merita.org if they're interested in finding out more of it. But we're bringing together a bunch of individuals and on the forefront of housing solutions. I'm sure we're going to talk about the tiny homes, co-housing, and other types of opportunities. Certainly, we're seeing more condominium development, more different types of housing development that are intended to meet the needs of people. The needs of seniors, for example, very different necessarily than the needs of a young family. And so the trick is to be able to do those things and do them in an affordable way, that will be available to to sort of meet the demand.
It seems to me one of the trends now, not just here in Maine, but nationally, is that both senior citizens and younger people want to live in urban areas, want to be able to get rid of the car and walk to the store and walk to restaurants and walk to a park. Hannah, you're nodding.
I think it's a issue of people of all ages. I mean, on this panel, I think we're all in these varying age groups. And I think it's an issue of community. People want to live in a place where they can interact with each other. If you're a young parent, being able to walk to a childcare facility is a huge quality of life benefit. If you're a senior, being able to walk to resources, having assisted living facilities, for example, located in communities and not on the outskirts. Our hope for the state, and we're a very rural state, so this is a long ways from where we are communities that bring us closer together. A lot of us live in isolated places, which makes care for kids, care for seniors more difficult. And I think the trend nationally is people want to be more connected. Urban living offers that, but I think there are ways to do that in more rural areas as well.
And to that point on the rural areas, people, as they age, they don't want to leave their communities. They don't want to leave. If they grew up in a small town, they want to stay in the small town. So we work with many municipalities to try and incent them to become age-friendly communities. And we're going to be working with other state agencies to become an age-friendly state. And that simply means working with town leaders to set up resources and amenities within a municipal area where people want to be and people want to come together and get that interaction that Hannah was speaking about. It can be in rural areas and it can be in urban areas.
You know, the way people live is always changing, isn't it? You know, we drive through the countryside and you see those great, big, old, beautiful farmhouses, and many generations live together in those, and that's not usually the case anymore. We often hear that Maine has really old housing stock. And we've touched on this sort of tangentially, are new developments and redevelopments kind of an opportunity to reshape the way we live in Maine?
Yes, it's challenging. The older housing stock in large part is in disrepair, and a decision often has to be made. Do you keep it or do you just switch it out and try and replace? It's probably one of the more challenging areas that we have in Maine because we have such an old housing stock. We have such brutal winters and harsh conditions, but it's in many ways it's the fabric of our state, and it poses quite a challenge.
And just to add some numbers to that, we have approximately 550,000 homes in Maine, and 400,000 of those are not weatherized. So we have
still,
and the state has been working diligently, Efficiency Maine Trust, Maine Housing, other organizations. We still have a long ways to go, and I think that some of what Dan talked about, some of these homes really can't be made more efficient, but many of them need to be made more efficient because it's where people are living. We have, I believe, the second oldest housing stock, and we're still the most dependent on heating oil. And that kind of also brings us back to climate planning, weatherization, how do we transition heating systems? I mean, it's a huge part of what the governor is focused on.
And I guess, go ahead.
Yeah, but if I'm a person who's looking to buy a home, typically in many communities, the existing housing stock, even with all of its problems, is going to be the most affordable option. So, the new housing that, is built to today's energy standards may be, a lot less expensive to operate, but it may be much more expensive to get into. So for many, buyers, they're going to be looking at the existing housing stock and figuring out how to renovate it to make it work more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. And if there's one theme across all parts of the state is people want to live in more energy efficient housing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a cold state and oil's expensive and people are concerned about the climate. I guess we're talking a little bit, and Hannah, you touched on this when I asked, are there opportunities to sort of reshape the way we live in Maine? And you talked about making things more energy efficient, more climate friendly. Dan and Gary, what about, you know, we've seen some old mills redeveloped. I know that that is sort of an opportunity and a challenge. They're beautiful. They're already there, but they're expensive to redevelop. What are some more other sort of innovative ways in which we're looking at this crisis as also an opportunity?
Well, I think there are some communities that have done a wonderful job with their old mills and old schools. And we've seen there's a state historic tax credit as well as a federal historic tax credit that helps mitigate that cost. So in some communities, they have really done a great job revitalizing these older foundations of their community. I think there are some opportunities we talked about the older farmhouses or the larger bedroom homes that may not be attractive to, say, one generation, but there are co-housing ideas that are popping up around the country where a group of like-minded folks that will want to say, you know what, let's share this house and let's share the costs associated with it. And that can become an affordable alternative that we haven't seen too much in Maine, but there are areas in the country where we've seen it. So when we pull together conferences, and we're having our 50th conference on October 1st, we're looking to the future, and we're going to try and bring these ideas into Maine, get people thinking in that direction.
One of the things that can make those ideas work better is oftentimes requires some changes in the local zoning. So, for example, if you have that large farmhouse that Dan's talking about, you know, in order to have a good co-housing opportunity there, it might call for putting up some additional buildings with additional families to live on that piece of property. Many town zonings may not allow that, especially in the rural areas. So it does require examining those things, and they have to be done, unfortunately, on a town-by-town basis and go through the political process to get those changes to occur.
It looked to me, Hannah, like you wanted to jump in.
No, I think his point is well made. I live in a very small town, offshore island, and I've worked with our local town planning board, and they're all, you know, incredibly dedicated volunteers. But this work of changing ordinances, making them more housing friendly, making communities more oriented towards building housing, it's incredibly difficult work. It's something my office has been asked to tackle. We have got a lot of issues on the plate right now, but clearly towns and communities need more guidance. They need sort of more inspiration about how they can change their zoning to encourage housing. That's a big can of worms. Maybe it's something Dan can take on.
Well,
Dan says thanks.
You know what? I think when a community realizes that when they have affordable options or housing options that are available across a broad array of income strata, that their community will be healthier and their town will be healthier and the quality of life, and they'll become an attractive place for people to be. And so we encourage municipal leaders to think in that direction.
All right. And well, go ahead, yeah. Gary.
And it is happening from, you know, in town to town. I mean, in Portland revised its zoning in certain of its zones to allow for infill housing and for people to build additional apartments within, you know, within the city center, which is really helpful. That's where people want to be. And so it is going on, but there's a lot of work to be done.
We are going to take a quick break. When we return, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and Insulation Rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, hosting workshops statewide and the upcoming Crime Wave Conference. Learn more at mainewriters.org.
I'm Corey Turner from NPR's Education Desk. You might have heard the reporting that Chris Arnold and I did last year on federal grants for public school teachers who work in lower-income schools. Many of those grants were suddenly converting to loans. saddling teachers with thousands of dollars in debt.
Honestly, I cried at one point because I was like, this isn't right.
We kept on the story for a year. And a few months ago, the education department promised to change the program and to erase the debts of many hardworking teachers. Chris and I even got to break the news to one of those teachers. You're going to get your grants back.
That is such good news. Oh, that's such good news.
Dozens of interviews and thousands of pages of government documents. This story required a lot of time and resources. And public radio members, you made it possible.
Our Let's Grow Together membership campaign starts Tuesday, May 7th, but you can contribute right now at mainpublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475.
Coming soon from Safe Space Radio, a special program for Mental Health Awareness Month. Many white parents don't know how to talk to their kids about race and racism.
There are an awful lot of white people who I think are well-intended, who fundamentally do think that it's racist to even notice race.
Join us for stories about when and how to talk to white kids of all ages. Talking to White Kids About Race and Racism, a new program for Mental Health Awareness Month from Safe Space Radio.
And you can hear that program tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the future of housing in Maine. Joining me, Dan Brennan, director of Maine Housing, Gary Vogel, president of Merida, and Hannah Pingree, director of the Governor's Office of Policy and Management. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Lynn Fisher. She is resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and will be delivering the keynote address at next week's Merida conference. Thanks for calling in, Lynn.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us an overview of the national housing market? I understand most of the nation faces a housing shortage. It's not just here in Maine. Is that true?
I think it takes on different flavors. Certainly, we were just hearing great examples of how real estate markets are local. But at the national level, we really saw house prices and the housing market kind of slow down last year as interest rates started to rise. But this year, we're seeing, because rates are back down to around 4.2% for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, we're seeing house prices start picking up again for lower-priced homes. So while we're seeing maybe slight price declines of 1% to 2% for the highest-priced homes, we're still seeing actually pretty rapid growth at entry homes. And I think that speaks to some of the supply issues, right? Because as we were just talking about, I heard you guys talking, new housing supply tends to come in at higher house points or price points. And so these entry-level homes, it's still a really tight market almost everywhere around the country.
Lynn, I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you. Can you get any closer to the phone, the speaker on your phone?
That's a little better.
Yeah, great.
Okay,
I understand regulations may sometimes hinder development, but can also play a role in addressing housing needs. Can you talk about how regulations can help out when it comes to low and middle income individuals?
Well, if housing regulation, if land use regulations allow for more units per acre, you know, for attached housing instead of just single family housing, you know, for smaller footprints of housing, those types of things certainly can contribute to more affordable housing being developed. In other ways, we might have to think about ways to reduce fees and the cost of permitting for certain types of developments. That could also help incent, you know, more affordable units at different price points.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Lynn Fisher. She's with the American Enterprise Institute, and she will be delivering the keynote address at next week's Merida conference here in Maine. Thank you, Lynn. We're going to go to Karen, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a real estate agent, and I am 25 years old, so I quite naturally work with a lot of first-time home buyers in the state. And I kind of have two things I want to touch on. The first is that just within my own personal sphere and within the clients that I work with, I meet a lot of people that really want to buy in Portland and the greater Portland area, and it's simply unattainable for them. And I've had quite a few people who begin their search in Portland and actually end up purchasing homes in the Lewiston Auburn area, which is an area which, you know, housing, I think, is high in most urban areas of the state. But compared to Portland, it's still relatively affordable. And I think a lot of first-time home buyers that focus on the Portland area overlook it. But there's, I've seen quite a significant migration of people that start out in Portland and go north up to that area and are very happy. The other thing that I would really like to have addressed that I don't think has been touched on is the student loan crisis. I would say both from my own personal experience with my friends, my personal sphere, and all of the first-time homebuyers that I work with, it is the number one, at least anecdotally from my experience, the number one obstacle to getting people into homes. In Maine, we have the Opportunity Maine Tax Credit, which is excellent, and it's a great start. But the way that you get qualified for a mortgage is based on your debt-to-income ratio, which is based on your monthly payment. And that's not doing anything to help people qualify for higher mortgages. So on a policy level, it's a serious issue affecting first-time homebuyers in Maine that really needs to be addressed further.
Sure, Karen. And as you're talking, both Anna Pinkery and our other guests are nodding that yes, this is part of why this issue is so complicated. And part of it is that so many young people are facing really high student loan payments. Also interested, Karen, in what you said about Lewiston-Auburn. I read recently that the youngest city in Maine is Biddeford.
We've spent some time with the folks in Biddeford, and we talk about Maine being the oldest state in the nation, and also we all talk about the aging, and we've talked about it here. Biddeford is getting younger, and there are many towns and municipalities in southern Maine that are getting younger. And so, again, it just points to it's not a one-size-fits-all solution, and we have to address affordable housing needs in many different ways and varieties. And to the caller's point, spot on about the student debt situation. It's a big deal.
Karen, thank you so much for calling. We're going to move now to Jason Thomas. He's Director of Housing Counseling for Coastal Enterprises, Inc. Thanks for calling in, Jason.
Yes, thanks for having me.
I understand a big focus of yours is helping first-time home buyers. What kinds of things do you find out many of them need to know?
I guess maybe the better question is what don't they need to know. I think it's really tough because it's as a first-time home buyer, you don't know what you don't know until you're presented with everything that buying a home encompasses. And we really look at it as education being, you know, a huge kind of cornerstone to not only getting successful home buyers generated, but also really as an offset to future delinquency problems. You know, we've noticed because we serve Cumberland County, Lincoln County, Sagatahoc County in home buyer education, and we're also looking, we do a lot of foreclosure and default counseling all throughout the state. And we find that to be really true, that those people who not only suffered defaults from you know, the crisis now that's almost 10 years removed, they really didn't have a lot of that education up front. It wasn't as pervasive at the time as it is now. And so that's really, you know, we not only would like to see everybody that's buying a home, especially first-time home buyers, go through home buyer education, really for that purpose. I mean, we're looking here to try to, you know, regardless of the income level, you know, an economy that really works for everyone, and housing is a cornerstone of that. So,
all right. Well, Jason, you're kind of breaking up a little bit. We'll see if this is clear. But, you know, earlier we talked a little bit about co-housing, and that is one of the possible solutions to the housing crisis. I know that you're working on something called cooperative housing models. What is this and how might they help?
Yeah, and I mean, one of those things, I don't know if I'm coming through any
sounds better,
better
yeah.
But excellent. You know, we're only really a generation and a half or two generations removed from generational housing, you know, where people occupied the same home many different generations. But the model that we're working with in a financial literacy capacity right now is around, there's eight cooperative mobile home communities in the state of Maine. And Maine is a state that has a significant mobile home population. And this is a model of these are people who live in these communities who have chosen to do so because of a community focus. They own the parks themselves. They have significant input, really all the input, into board governance and how the parks are run. And these are people that otherwise could have very well chosen to be on these long lists, I think, that Dan had mentioned earlier. Of people looking for subsidized rental housing in a market that's really saturated with people looking for that, and they've embraced this. So not only is it an affordable housing option for them, but they've really embraced the community building spirit of it, and they've also really embraced the ability to govern themselves. New Hampshire is where this resident-owned community, a ROC movement, was really born out of. I think there's a real opportunity in Maine to grow that.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Jason Thomas, Director of Housing Counseling at Coastal Enterprises. Hannah.
I'd love to just put a pitch for Maine Housing's first-time homebuyer program. I just helped organize one in the community that I live in, and it's an incredibly helpful way for young or homebuyers of any age to really understand the dynamics of mortgages, the interest rates, you know, the amount of debt you're taking on, the amount of savings, and the earlier caller on the student loan crisis. I mean, really thinking about financial planning when it comes to a home is important. It's something we should probably be teaching in every Maine school, starting in high school. So I would just encourage anybody thinking about buying a home to consider taking those classes. They're on the Maine Housing website. They're really well done.
All right. We're going to go to a voicemail that came in before the program.
Hi, my name is Jackie, and I'm a 27-year-old resident of Dover, New Hampshire, though my husband and I are building a tiny house on wheels in southern Maine. There are many reasons we decided to build a tiny house, one of which is that we can't afford a normal full-sized house, but are tired of apartment life with unruly neighbors and unresponsive landlords. We are already connected to a fairly extensive number of people who currently live in tiny houses or are in the process of going tiny in Maine. Though in many towns, it's often hard to live tiny in a fully legal way. So I'm wondering if there's any movement in the state to legalize tiny house living, or if it's even been looked at that tiny houses could be a viable option to expand affordable housing in Maine. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for that voicemail. And you mimic an email from Pamela, who writes, "Why are towns reluctant to welcome small homes or tiny homes as they might be known? Our town of North Yarmouth has a new development going in, and minimum square footage is 3,000. That's not helping seniors who want to downsize or younger buyers who don't want to waste that space. Why? The rage today, and rightly so, is lean and simplify, and it seems as though we're behind the time."
So Maine has a tradition of what we call home rule, that all of the zoning is local and every town gets to adopt its own. And so, you know, communities, it's difficult to get change to occur, even though people kind of recognize the need. They recognize that maybe it should happen in their town, but maybe not in their neighborhood. And that's how you get the whole NIMBY situation. So these changes are, you know, difficult to get to occur. And unfortunately, they have to happen on a town-by-town basis. So some towns, you may have some town leaders who are more enlightened and realize, you know, the need for their children, their parents, the people who work in the community, and are willing to roll up their sleeves and make the changes to the zoning that will allow those things to occur. But in many communities, there are the impediments that really come from those kinds of zoning ordinances that the caller talked about.
I think it's safe to say that there will probably never be a statewide solution because of the points that Gary made. We've invited the Reverend Faith Fowler from Michigan, who has a tiny home project in Detroit, and we were fascinated by it, so we invited her up, and we try and engage municipality and municipal leaders on this issue, and where there is the desire to put it together, we would love to finance projects that go in this direction, because I think it's an opportunity, another tool in the toolbox for the reasons the caller stated.
We'll go to Steve calling from Orono. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. Hello, Steve. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully, Steve can call back when he has better connection there. We'll go to Tim in Old Orchard Beach. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
I just wanted to share a personal experience of
why I think the real estate market has seemed to have gone crazy. My wife and I bought a home in Old Orchard 3 years ago, a single-family home.
Tim, can you speak up or get closer to your phone?
Can you hear me now?
It's a little better. Go ahead.
Okay. We bought a single-family home in Old Orchard Beach 3 years ago. We got a call from a realtor last week saying that they had driven through our neighborhood and had people who want to live here and offered us double what we paid without even walking into the house.
Yep, that's a story all over Southern Maine especially, isn't it?
The issue in Maine, obviously, is we have a lot of people who want to buy second homes in Maine. I mean, I'm not sure the caller if who was looking to buy his house, but clearly, especially on the coast, but it certainly happens in lots of tourist destinations in Maine, homes are being bought as second homes, and that really changes the face of our communities. I mean, I live on an offshore island, and when summer residents buy a lot of the downtown homes, same things happened in Stonington, in many other coastal communities, it really changes the face of the community. I think there are proactive housing organizations out there who have tried to help retain the year-round housing stock in downtowns, but it's a significant issue, and you know, clearly when you have people coming with very different means that can afford much more expensive homes, it really is a challenge for people who want to live here year-round, people who want to live and work in communities, and it's not an easily solvable issue. It takes a lot of proactive effort to try to preserve homes for year-round people.
And in some of those same communities that Hannah is talking about, you know, people are buying homes to put them on Airbnb. And although that's, you know, an opportunity for a homeowner, it's difficult to say people shouldn't be able to do that. At the same time, it does have an impact upon the community if you have, you know, different people, you know, in your neighborhood every few days.
We're going to take another quick break. We're talking about the future of housing in Maine. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Ollie's Trolley, offering private charters for weddings, rehearsal dinners, and corporate functions located at 1 West Street in Bar Harbor and at olliestrolley.com. And Monson Arts, a nonprofit organization supported by the Libra Foundation, now offering intensive one-week summer workshops. Learn more at monsonarts.org.
Alabama lawmakers are considering an outright ban on abortion in defiance of U.S. Supreme Court precedent.
This bill criminalizes abortion, basically.
It's part of a strategy to get an abortion rights case before a conservative majority Supreme Court, plus the latest on the Attorney General's congressional testimony on the Mueller report. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And join us for All Things Considered weekday evenings from 4 to 6:30. And join us at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling for World Affairs. Today's program, Left Behind, U.S. Foreign Policy and Middle America's Middle Class. That's World Affairs coming up after Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about housing issues in Maine. Joining me, Gary Vogel, president of Merida, Hannah Pingree, director of the Office of Policy and Management, and Dan Brennan, director of Maine Housing. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Tim, who's calling from Limestone. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm calling about a company that I am now doing some business with called Snap Space Solutions. And they are creating living spaces in one-time-use shipping containers, the steel, corrugated steel containers, 20-foot long, 40-foot long, stackable. You can customize it to be you know, all plumbed up and all the electricity and heating and air conditioning and ready to hook up to a power source. They're really fabulous designers and engineers that have really revolutionized the cost of possible living. You've seen that they've put in a small complex in Portland. I think it's on Washington Street, where there's a few stores that have built for people. And I'd like your thoughts on that. I heard earlier about the tiny houses, and I know that's a local issue, but something's got to change realistically to get the cost of housing down where it's affordable. We want the young people coming to Maine. Why not let them live in a tiny house?
Sure, you're calling, Tim, you're calling from Limestone. Have you had interest up there of in houses like this?
Actually, I'm going to be doing work with those guys, building those houses.
In Aroostook County?
Yep, that's right, up in Limestone on the old Loring Air Force Base. We're up here in a couple of the big warehouse buildings. We've brought a couple of businesses up here, one being Loring Industries, another being New England Kenworth. We have a big truck parts store, and we do servicing on heavy-duty trucks and the logging trucks and the farmers up here. So it's a very vibrant place up here. People want work. We have some good jobs to offer. We're looking for to build that employment base up here in Limestone as well.
Thanks for calling.
I think back over the years, and we've heard of the containers. Now it's tiny homes. We once had a person come and talked about concrete cinder block housing. We've seen a 3D printed house in Austin, Texas. As long as the town would, as long as it meets local codes, as long as it meets some basic fundamentals, that's the type of thing we should be thinking about. So the challenge is to find the market, find the local towns that will allow it, make sure that it meets basic habitability and all the things I'm sure that the caller is taking into consideration. And those are the types of innovative things that we'd love to be part of. There's a lot of ifs there.
I just say that, Tim, we'd love to come up and visit. Sounds like you're doing some cool things. And I think the issue that Gary spoke to earlier is building housing is incredibly expensive in the state of Maine. And figuring out innovation, both building the kinds of houses that people want to live in, but finding ways to do it more cost-effectively is really our current challenge. There has not been a lot of innovation in the housing sector in really the last 30, 40 years, but we're starting to see some new changes. I mean, Dan talked about 3D printing of homes. That is something of the future. We'll see if that really happens. There's obviously a big movement around lower, more efficient homes, zero energy homes, passive houses, and the kind of technology that would make that happen. We have a company in Maine starting up to make wood fiber insulation to make super efficient homes. So hopefully, I mean, our ideal would be Maine would really be on the forefront of housing technology. We have a lot of wood that needs places to go, and I think Maine has a real opportunity to be on the forefront of this kind of new housing technology.
Tim, thanks for your call. Barry on Facebook writes, as long as property taxes keep going through the roof, people can forget about affordable housing. For modest, small, single-family homes, the property tax can easily be half the mortgage. And rents are really expensive, mostly due to high property taxes. Someone has to pay these taxes, so it's passed on to renters. Low-income people are being taxed right out of homes they've owned for years, while towns keep spending and raising taxes as if money grows on trees.
That seems like a good question for Hannah.
Thanks, Gary. I mean, clearly, Maine is very reliant on property taxes. The last 8 years have seen struggles in school funding, loss of municipal revenue sharing. So property taxes have been a challenge. Clearly, they're locally driven, but they do have the state plays a role in that. So that's something we certainly hear across the state. It's not an issue that's just on the coast anymore. Trying to help keep people in their homes, especially seniors and low-income people, is incredibly important because people who can no longer afford their homes become, you know, it's very difficult to find a rental. So it's a good question. It's a good challenge that the legislature is dealing with in the budget right now. And there's certainly no easy solution.
Well, I mean, towns obviously have costs. I mean, we know the infrastructure, you need to repair your roads. So, you know, those costs are real. But I do know that there's a bill in the legislature to increase the homestead exemption. So I think there are things that can be done that are being done to look at those issues, and that's probably the best solution for those problems.
We've talked a lot about high cost issues. We've been working with public housing authorities in the last 2 or 3 years about keeping seniors safe in their homes, and for a very, very minimal investment, we have worked with through our public housing partners, hundreds of Maine seniors to do very minor modifications to their home to keep them safe in their home. And it's one of the easiest programs that we've created and one that I think has some of the most benefits. So, yeah, there are these incredible challenges that we've been speaking about today, but then there are other things that we've been trying to do that say, you know what, this just makes sense. Let's just do this. And for a couple of $1,000 per home, putting in a grab bar, getting rid of some area rugs, people can move about their home in a much safer way. It's a model that we've replicated off of Johns Hopkins University, and we're really proud of it. And we've talked a lot about people keeping people safe in their home. This is a low-cost way to do that.
Kendra on Facebook, I'm a board member and beneficiary of Island Housing Trust, an island-wide nonprofit organization serving the middle-income needs of year-round workers and residents of Mount Desert Island. Without IHT, our family would not have been able to afford a home on the island where my husband and I work and where our daughters go to school. We are sincerely grateful to IHT and other nonprofits around Maine working tirelessly to mitigate the housing shortage and sustain vibrant year-round communities across the state. And Gary, it sounds to me like Kendra is one of those people who may not qualify for so-called affordable housing, but still has a hard time, would have a hard time without some sort of organization living in her community.
Sure. So when we talk about affordable housing, I mean, in the world that Maine Housing operates in and the housing authorities, and when I'm not doing my volunteer work for Merida, I'm an attorney in Portland and I represent a lot of housing developers. And when we talk about affordable housing, it's really about housing that is intended for people who are at 60% or less of area median income for their community. But for folks who are at 100% of area median income, there still may be real difficulties in affording that housing. And there aren't a lot of programs that are out there to make those homes affordable to people in that income at that income band. So the fact that, the other thing is communities like Mount Desert Island, I mean, there's a real conflict there. So people who own and have owned, should have the opportunity to get the benefit of the value of their property. But on the other hand, you need places for local people to live and work, who work in those communities. So I do think that the best solutions are things like the organization that the caller, called about, being able to try to provide those opportunities within those communities and not necessarily to sort of re-engineer the supply and demand and of the community, which frankly just doesn't really work.
And I would just add in, Island Housing Trust is an incredible organization. I live on North Haven, and most of the offshore islands have specific housing organizations because of exactly what the writer wrote about. There are certain communities that just face an extreme housing challenge for families well above between 120 and 200% of area median income, people who cannot afford to live in their town. And especially if you're on an island, you can't work in that town if you can't live there. You see this in Maine, really very community-oriented solutions where people, the community itself is not looking to the state. They're not looking to Maine Housing. They're saying, how can we solve this problem for ourselves because we want our community to be vibrant? And Island Housing Trust has done an incredible job over many years.
And to that point, if there are philanthropic organizations out there and other organizations that want to contribute to this, there's a wealth of expertise that we can assist with, and folks like Gary and his guy, we know how to do this. And with a funding source and initiative, it can be done at a lot of different income levels, some that we may not be able to use our resources for. But the fundamental infrastructure of creating affordable housing solutions does exist within the state.
An email from Peg, is there anything being done to reduce the cost of solar and or heat pumps? My home is well insulated, but the cost for fuel oil is second only to my mortgage payments for the entire year.
So the cost of solar has come down a lot just in terms of the marketplace. Every year, it seems like the cost of the solar panels does go down. Maine is starting to have some incentives now. Anna, maybe you can talk about that a little more.
That's a great question. There's both some bills coming to the legislature around solar and community solar that would help more people access solar. I think you're seeing in other parts of the country an incredible solar boom where people can pay for solar through their utility bills. Maine doesn't allow that right now, but it's something that may be coming in the future. And on the issue of heat pumps, the governor has announced an initiative to try to install 100,000 new heat pumps in Maine over the next 5 years. She will do that by doing incentives to help people afford heat pumps, working with Maine Housing to help low-income people buy heat pumps, especially where it makes sense for their homes. So the governor very much agrees with that question, and I think we're working on some pretty proactive solutions to help homeowners.
Okay, we're getting tight on time, but we're going to try to squeeze in a couple more questions. Audrey in North Yarmouth, if you could be quick, that would be great. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm a member of the planning board, and I heard one of your callers talk about tiny homes in North Yarmouth and minimum requirements actually for 3,000 square foot homes. The planning board has been working hard to try to make more affordable housing possible in town, and we recently lowered our lot sizes, but we can't control when builders develop lots and sell them with covenants in their deeds that require minimum house sizes. So I didn't want people to think that North Yarmouth is not trying to encourage a variety of housing for all types of people.
Audrey, thank you so much for calling in. And this is exactly, Hannah, what you're talking about, how difficult this is. It's not just a matter of changing the zoning ordinance.
Well, first of all, to the caller, we appreciate her service on the planning board. That's hard work, and I think most towns are struggling with this and trying to be proactive. But obviously, it takes both developers and towns working collaboratively.
It's also important to strike a balance between trying to do a public purpose and not overregulate something for the future that becomes a deterrent. So I thought her point was well made.
Audrey, thank you for your call. And we just have about a minute left, but I've got to put this one out there. Christopher on Facebook says, is it housing costs or the lack of living wages?
Yes.
both are concerns.
Well, you could talk about it more than that. We had a whole minute there. A tweet that says, I see storage unit facilities popping up all over Midcoast Maine. Imagine if we could take that model and make small house communities.
Exactly. I mean, the innovative thinking is there. These ideas are out there. And where there is an opportunity to pull it all together and make it happen, we want to be part of that solution.
All right. Well, that's the last word. Thank you all so much for being here today. That was Dan Brennan, Director of Maine Housing. Also here, Hannah Pingree, Director of the Governor's Office of Policy and Management, and Gary Vogel, President of MERIDA, the Maine Real Estate and Development Association, which is having its conference next
Tuesday, May 7th.
I caught our engineer by surprise at the Holiday Inn by the Bay. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Isaac Merson took your calls. We had additional help from John Keimel. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.